इन्द्रो बृहस्पतिः शन्नो विष्णुरुक्रमः नमो ब्रह्मणे नमस्ते वायो त्वमेव प्रत्यक्षं ब्रह्मासि त्वमेव प्रत्यक्षं ब्रह्म वदिष्यामि ऋतं वदिष्यामि सत्यं वदिष्यामि तन्मामवतु तद्वक्तारमवतु अवतु माम् अवतु वक्तारम् ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः So we've come to the middle of the Bhrigu-vali, the last of the three major sections of the Taittiriya Upanishad, and we'll continue. We were in the sixth vali before. Let's turn to the beginning of the sixth vali and recite, and then we'll pick up the thread. Repeat after me, please.
Anando Brahmeti Vyajanat, Anando Brahmeti Vyajanat, Ananda Dhyeva Kalviman, Bhutani Jayante, Ananda Dhyeva Kalvimani, Bhutani Jayante, Anandena jatani jivanti, Anandena jatani jivanti, Anandam prayantyavisam vishantiti, Anandam prayantyavisam vishantiti, Saisha Bhargavi Varuni Vidya, Saisha Bhargavi Varuni Vidya, Paramevyo Man Pratishthita, Paramevyo Man Pratishthita, Yahevam Veda Pratitishthati, Tehevam vedap pratitishthati annavanannado bhavati annavanannado bhavati mahan bhavati prajaya pashubhir mahan bhavati prajaya pashubhir brahma varchasena Brahma Varchasena Mahan Kirtya Mahan Kirtya.
Very good. So in the past class we went through actually several values very quickly because we saw that same pattern unfolding with regard to each of the five koshas. We saw an unfoldment a little bit like what we saw in the meditation moments ago, connection between Vyashti and Samashti, the manifestation at the level of each kosha, manifestation of Brahman as each at the level of each kosha, Vyashti and Samashti. And we concluded that discussion with the last of the koshas, Anandamaya Kosha, and that leads us then to our closing part then. So that topic is really came to a conclusion in our prior class, and I don't think we need to go back over that. But there's a little bit of a conclusion. In this tradition, when a very important teaching is given, it's always, punctuated. Punctuated, you know, like an exclamation mark. Of course, there's no exclamation marks in Sanskrit. In fact, there's not even a period. All you have are danda, double danda. But punctuation in a poetic sense would mean stuti, praise. So at the end of this, this is a very important section, starting from the beginning of the Bhrigu Valli, talking about creation. And in those six valleys from two to six, we went through creation at each one of these five levels, so each of the koshas. So having concluded this very profound subject matter, we would expect to find some stuti, some verses of praise before going on to the next subject matter. And that's what we see here at the second half of the sixth valley. And picking up the thread where we left off, Sai Sa Esha Bhargavi Varuni Vidya, referring to those teachings that we've seen from the beginning of the Bhrigu Valli up until here. It says, Sa Esha, this is that Vidya, that wisdom, that spiritual knowledge. And what kind of spiritual wisdom is it? Bhargavi Vidya, the wisdom of Bhrigu. Bhargavi means of Bhrigu. And of course, just as this Vidya is of Bhargavi, Bhrigu is the son of Varuna. One comes from the other. So from Varuna comes Bhrigu. From Bhrigu comes this teaching. So this then is not just Bhargavi Vidya, the Vidya that comes from Bhrigu, but it is also Varuni Vidya. It's because it has Varuna, Bhrigu's father, as the original source. And then the stuti continues, Paramevyo man pratishtita ya evam veda pratitishtati. We have to take those two lines together. Take the second part first. Yaha evam veda. Yaha, one who, veda, knows. Evam, thus. One who knows thus. One who knows this Bhargavi Vidya. And knowing it doesn't mean in an abstract, academic manner. Someone who can look out into the cosmos. Someone who looks up at the sky and sees. Yes, I can't think of another way of putting it. You look up the sky and you say, that is Bhagavan. That is a manifestation of Brahman. That is Ishvara. This is a vision that was unfolded in the opening sections of this Bhrigu Valli. So someone who has that very immediate understanding, someone who has that worldview, ya evam veda, one who understands thus, pratitishtati, that person is well established. Established in what? Parame vyo man pratishtata. That person is established in parame vyo man. In the, usually it's translated very literally, the supreme space. Parame vyo man literally means supreme space. What does that mean? Well, here vyo man, space, is a symbolically represents consciousness, Chaitanya. Just as space has no edge or boundary, consciousness has no edge or boundary. So here, Vyoman means that boundaryless consciousness, which is Parama, which is limitless, boundaryless, vast. So one who has gained this Bhargavi Vidya, this vision of the five koshas being a manifestation of Brahman, such a person is pratishtita, established paramevyoman, in this reality of one's own limitless consciousness, the truth of one's own nature. And now comes more of the more typical stuti and an introduction of the next subject matter. Annavan Annadaha bhavati. Bhavati, that person becomes, as a result of gaining this knowledge, that person becomes annavan. One who has a lot of food is annavan. That is literally what it means. Dhanavan is one who has dhana. Annavan is one who has anna. We all have some, don't we? Right. Now this, but look at the context. One who has this vidya becomes, bhavati, becomes annavan, possessed of food, and also becomes anadaha. Anada means one who eats food. You don't just have the food, you get to enjoy it as well. Now that sounds a little obscure. We're going to see in the coming three vallis that the word anna here is symbolic. You can take it, of course, in the surface meaning, in the direct meaning of food, but in a more subtle way, and in a symbolic way, I should say, in what we're going to see in the next three vallis, is anna represents all worldly stuff. Any worldly achievement, any worldly possession is represented by anna. So now we can paraphrase this. One who gains enlightenment, I'm paraphrasing Paramevyoman Pratishtata, one who gains enlightenment gains all worldly pleasures and enjoys them. Sounds like going to heaven, and it's not, of course. This is stuti. A subject matter is praised according to the profundity of the subject matter. What we've just seen is a very profound subject, so it has to be given the highest praise. Now, if one is enlightened, do they literally get all worldly things and literally gain the enjoyment of all worldly things? No. But one thing that's true is they're happier and more content than anyone who has any amount of worldly things. If somebody were, what would it mean to have to possess all worldly things? Well, in a very concrete sense, you'd have to be emperor of the planet Earth. So suppose, at some point in the future, as a result of all kinds of politics, suppose someone becomes emperor of Earth. And in some sense, they literally possess or own every stick of wood and every blade of grass on this planet, suppose. Do you think that person would be extraordinarily happy? In fact, what a headache it would be to have that job, if it's a job. So here, the idea is that one who's enlightened is actually gains more contentment and peace than even a person who would possess everything and enjoy everything. Anat, anadaha, bhavati. That person becomes annavan, possessed of all good things, and anadaha, experience all good things. We're talking about an enlightened person whose contentment and peace really no longer depends on getting anything or experiencing anything. So this, we take it as stuti, and then you'll see, starting with the next vali, how the topic of anna is used in a more symbolic way as we proceed. And to finish off this vali, stuti concludes, stuti means praise, the praise concludes, mahan bhavati, the person becomes great. How becomes great? How? Prajaya becomes great with having many children. Person becomes great, pashubihi, having many cattle. And you may have heard me refer before that in ancient times, cattle was a measure of wealth. We didn't measure wealth in terms of dollars or rupees. We measured wealth in ancient times in terms of number of cattle. So person becomes mahan, great, with regard to praja, progeny, with regard to pashu, with regard to cattle, and with regard to brahmavarchas, with regard to this light of... The usual translation makes me smile. Spiritual effulgence. What does that mean? Spiritual effulgence. When I'm with children, I make fun of this. I say, If somebody is enlightened, I don't do that for children. I say, if one of your classmates is really, really bright, does it mean they glow in the dark? Little kids love that. But Brahmavarjas means what? Somebody who's enlightened glows in the dark? Silly. So Brahmavarjas, symbolic. That light of spiritual wisdom. Mahan Kirtya. The person becomes great with regard to Kirti, praise. That person becomes praiseworthy, the enlightened person. So with this, we come to an end of the main teaching in the Bhrigu Valley, the last of the valleys of the Taittiriya Upanishad. And we come now to three, I'm not sure if I should call them odd, but they seem odd. Three odd valleys, 7, 8, and 9. By the way, there are only 10 in the entire chapter, so we're coming towards the end of our text, and we'll probably see 7, 8, and 9 quickly, because they again follow the same pattern. They're all about Anna. In fact, these three valleys together are often called Anna Stuti, praise of food. Now, you wonder, why is this Upanishad praising food? Why so much emphasis on Anna? Well, careful now. I made mention a moment ago that Anna is going to be symbolic. And we'll see the symbolism, how Anna represents everything. And we're also going to see something unfolded in these three valleys, which to me looks like a little preface. This whole text, you've noticed, is rich with different kinds of symbolic meditation, starting with the first valley all the way through. We saw, remember the Pakshi Kalpana from the first valley? The bird, imagine the bird's right wing is this, the left wing is that. All these rather obscure and sometimes bizarre meditations are found throughout this text. This text was certainly came into existence and was taught and studied in a time when there was so much emphasis on these forms of upasana, these forms, the symbolic meditations. And we come now to the end of the text, and we find more of that. The coming three valleys, perhaps meant for meditation, certainly full of that same kind of symbolic approach that we saw in the meditations. And here, with regard to Anna, representing all material things. Why don't we begin with the seventh valley and see how that unfolds. Annam nanindyat, annam nanindyat. Tadvratam, tadvratam, pranovahannam, pranovahannam, shariramannadam, shariramannadam, prane shariram pratishtitam, prane shariram pratishtitam, sharire prana. Pratishtitaha sharire prana pratishtat tadhetadannamanne pratishtitam tadhetadannamanne pratishtitam sayahetadannamanne sayahetadannamanne pratishtitam veda pratitishtati Pratishtitam Veda Pratitishtati. All right, and Vali goes on a little bit more, but we'll see this opening part. It begins, and this is what seems odd to me, after this very profound Vedantic teaching. Then the next line says, Annam Nanindyat. One should not disrespect food. What? Seems odd? This Upanishad there are some very odd things in this Upanishad. To me, that's evidence of its antiquity and its authenticity. If a later scholar wanted to clean up this Upanishad, you know how oftentimes works are edited, and every time you go through a process of editing, it's made to flow more smoothly, the transitions are ironed out, it's made more coherent, more smooth. Can you say that about Taittiriya Upanishad? Smooth transitions, nice flow from section to section. Hey, this isn't as an abrupt a jump as you can find anywhere. To me, that, as I said, that's evidence that this text is very ancient, first of all, and uncorrupted. No one's come and cleaned it up. Remember, Upanishad is Rishi Vakya. It's these rishis, I can only presume, they would end up after a meditation just Brahma Varchasena, glowing with their discoveries. And then they would start composing these texts, which later became compiled into the Vedas. Do you think that they sat down and wrote an outline before they started composing so that it would all be nice and tidy and orderly? This is all inspired revelation. So inspired revelation, we wouldn't expect it to be very orderly or linear, and certainly this Upanishad is not. Bhagavad Gita, by contrast, is quite orderly, with a few exceptions. The Upanishads in general and Taittiriya in particular is an interesting jumble. All right, so we find this very abrupt shift. Annam nanindyat. One should not disrespect annam, food. Again, though, tadvratam, and that is his commitment. Someone, that is the vrata, the vow or commitment to be made. Now, why? Pranaha vai annam. Because annam is prana. Prana is annam. Prana is annam? What in the world? Prana is annam, and not only that, shariram anadam. Anada, we saw before, that atta affix means eater, one who eats. So anada is one who eats food. So prana is anna, and the sharira, body, is one who eats. Anna is one who eats anna. Anna being prana. The body eats prana. The body eats prana. What do you mean? Well, prane shariram pratishtitam. The shariram, your body, is pratishtitam. It's based prane, in prana. Has its life in prana, because of prana. And sharire, in the body, pranaha pratishtata. Body, prana abides in the body. Interesting language. The body exists in prana. Prana exists in the body. The body exists in prana doesn't mean in a physical sense. It means in a metaphoric sense. The body's existence is in prana, due to prana. On the other hand, prana literally abides in the body. We see these two statements side by side. Prane shariram pratishtitam, the body exists in prana. Sharire pranaha pratishtitaha, and prana abides in the body. Tat etat annam anne. Tat etat annam. This is that anna, that food, anne pratishtitam. Does this sound logical? This is that food which exists in food. I'm giving you a literal translation. This is that's what it says. Tat etat annam anne pratishtitam. This is that food which abides in food. What in the world is it talking about? And then, saha yaha etat annam anne pratishtitam veda. Saha yaha veda. One who understands, Who can understand? I don't know what it says. Saha yaha veda. One who understands etat, this what? Annam anne. This existence of food in food, that person pratishtitam. That person pratitishtati pratishtitam. That person becomes well established. Someone who understands this. Now, is that esoteric enough for you? And now you're probably waiting for me to help make it clear. I don't know how much we can do on this. We'll try. We'll see that in a moment. What we're seeing is a beginning. We really have to look at these three values together, 7, 8, and 9. You'll see how they come together as a unit to make any sense out of this at all. It's part of an ancient worldview. Let's start here. Prior sections, we've been talking about satyam, jnanam, anantam, brahma. One common misunderstanding about Advaita Vedanta is that Advaita Vedanta says Brahma is Satyam, therefore, what about this jagat? Mithya. So Brahma is Satyam, that's the important stuff, the real stuff. This jagat, this world is mithya, it's false, it's illusory, it's nonsense, therefore, who cares? Who cares about the world? This is a common statement made about Vedanta, and even though Shankaracharya himself is quotes that statement, that's not exactly what it means. Brahma satyam jagan mithya does not mean Brahma is valuable and the world is useless. In fact, what we're seeing in these three valleys is the opposite. Anna here represents the world. And what does it say? Nanindyat. Don't disregard that. Don't despise it. And the basis for that is what we saw in the prior six valleys. What did we see in the prior six valleys? That is, everything at each of the five kosha levels, everything is a manifestation of Brahman. Why should we disregard manifestations of Brahman? This is a Hindu worldview, and this is I feel sad that Advaita Vedanta is so often misunderstood as being world-negating. This is a term that Western scholars often use. They'll say Hinduism is world-negating, or if they're a little bit more scholarly, they'll say Advaita Vedanta is world-negating. Why? Brahma satyam jagan mithya. It says jagan mithya. The world is false. By definition, world negating. Well, when Shankaracharya says the word mithya, it doesn't mean false. When Sri Shankara uses the word mithya, it means that which depends, that whose existence depends on something else. That's what mithya means to Shankara. In talking about a clay pot, Shankara would say, in that example of the familiar clay pot, clay is satyam, pot is mithya. Pot is false? Can you pour water in a false pot? No. Pot exists. The term mithya here doesn't mean false. Mithya here is used in Advaita Vedanta. Mithya is used as a technical term. Give up the common meaning. Common meaning, of course, is false. But in Advaita Vedanta, mithya is given a technical meaning. The technical meaning is that which exists dependent on something else. Just as the pot exists dependent on the clay, just as the world exists dependent on Brahman. Brahma satyam. Jagan mithya. So how is it saying the world is false? Not at all. But this common misunderstanding then leads to this notion, Vedanta is world negating. And what does this verse say? annam, which means jagat, nanindyat. Don't call it false. Treat it with respect because it's a manifestation of Brahman. In more general language, the Hindu worldview is not that the world is an illusion. That's really a misinterpretation. And if you want to trace where that misinterpretation comes from, this is a long philosophical argument, and I don't think we want to get into it here. But around the time of Sri Shankaracharya, there was a rise of two schools of Buddhism who were in fact teaching that the world was illusion. And in Shankara, in many of his commentaries, he actually argues with these Buddhists, the Vijnanavadins in particular, this particular very philosophical school of Buddhism made some very powerful, profound arguments to say that the world is an illusion. But it was all philosophy. Remember, Vedanta isn't exactly philosophy. Remember that? We had a discussion long ago. So from a philosophical standpoint, perhaps one can make that argument. Doesn't make it real. Just means you can come up with a philosophy. You can come up with a lot of support, rational support for that philosophy. Shankara himself argued against it because even though one could make an elaborate intellectual case, either way, but you could make an intellectual case for the world being an illusion, but what the ancient rishis said is not that the world is illusion. What they said is the world is a manifestation of Brahman, or to use our very common language, everything is divine. We don't say everything is illusion. That's not what Hinduism teaches. Hinduism teaches everything is divine. Everything is a manifestation of God, to use common language. Look at these two perspectives. Someone who says Hinduism teaches that everything is illusion versus Hinduism teaches that everything is divine. These are very different worldviews. And someone who teaches or says that Hinduism's point of view is that everything is illusion, that person doesn't understand Vedanta, doesn't understand Vedas, Upanishad, certainly doesn't understand Taittiriya Upanishad, because annam means jagat. Nanindyat. Don't call it false. Manifestation of Brahman. Now, this point now is going to be developed in these three valleys. Here we're seeing two aspects of the world unfolded. One is prana and the other is sharira. And it says that prana gives life to the sharira, but prana exists in the sharira. We get this sense of mutuality. The body is in prana. Prana is in the body. Let me put this up on the board because we're going to extend this up over the... All right, so anna and anada. Anna, food. Anada. So anna, food, represents here jagat, the world. And anada, the one who eats food, represents what? The one who experiences anything. This is very symbolic stuff. So let anada here represent experiencer. Experiencers aren't limited to human beings. Even animals and plants have some kind of experience. So anything that undergoes experience. Now, we're going to see here, 7, 8, and 9. We're going to try to make some sense out of it. This is a very confusing passage. We'll try our best to make some sense out of it. So we saw here, anna is prana. And anada is sharira, body. So for now, let us appreciate that this world has prana and sharira. Well, I guess world and experiencer we can take together, because experiencers are part of the world. So from in the world, there are these two aspects, prana and sharira. And what about it? Nanindyat. Don't call it false. Don't call prana false. Don't call your body false. We saw they're mutually dependent here. Actually, I'm ahead of myself. Anatta comes in the next ending here. Repeat after me. Annavanan, I'm sorry. Annavanan nado bhavati. Annavanan nado bhavati. Mahan bhavati prajaya pashubhir brahma varchasena. Mahan bhavati prajaya prashubhir brahma varchasena. Mahan kirtya, mahan kirtya. Actually, this is a restatement of what we saw at the end of the sixth vali. Annavan annadaha bhavati. One who understands this, which is what we saw at the end of the prior slide, one who understands this complex symbolism, one who understands that annam, the world, is a manifestation of Brahman. One who understands that, what about it? Annavan becomes possessed of food. Annadaha gets to enjoy food. Bhavati becomes. And again, anna represents world. That person gains a world. That person experiences a world. Therefore, that person is praiseworthy. Mahan bhavati. That person becomes great. Prajaya, blessed with many children. Pashubihi, blessed with cattle, wealth. Brahmavarchasena, blessed with spiritual light. And Mahan kirtya. A person becomes great with kirti, with praise. So this is the first of the three. If we proceed and see the next two right side by side, the whole thing makes a little bit more sense. Usually things, if you get too much, it gets confusing. But this is a case where if you don't get the whole thing, it's confusing. You have to get all three of these valis, of these anuvakas together. If we don't get all three of these anuvakas, then it'll be confusing. So let's make sure we get 7, 8, and 9 all together today. So the eighth anuvaka. Annam na parichakshita, annam na parichakshita, tadvratam, tadvratam, apovahannam, apovahannam, jyotirannaram, jyotirannaram, apsu jyotih pratitishtitam, apsu jyotih pratishtitam, jyotishyapah pratishtitah, jyotishyapah pratishtitah. Yeah, let's just chant the whole thing. Tadetadannamanne pratishtitam, tadetadannamanne pratishtitam, sayahetadannamanne pratishtitam, veda pratitishtati, sayahetadannamanne pratishtitam, veda pratitishtati. Annavanan nado bhavati, annavanan nado bhav, mahan bhavati prajaya pashubhir brahma varchasena, mahan bhavati prajaya pashubhir brahma varchasena, mahan kirtya, mahan kirtya. You can see very easily the similarity in these passages. So the previous anuvaka began annam nanindyat. Here, we find it saying, annam na parichakshita, almost the same meaning. So, nanindyat means don't defile it, don't speak badly of it, don't put it down. Na parichakshita, don't abuse it, don't waste it, don't waste food, don't abuse it. Na parichakshita. Tadvratam, this is a vow, this is a commitment. Now, remember those. This is not really instruction about food, even though we shouldn't waste food for other reasons. By the way, do you realize the reason we shouldn't waste food in Hindu tradition is based on our doctrine of ahimsa? Did you know that? When you eat plants, you're killing plants. On the other hand, if you don't eat plants, you die and you kill this one. So we got to eat something. So we choose to eat plants. But then, why should we kill more plants than we need to in order to live? This is the basis for not wasting food. Okay, enough said. But that's not really what it's about. Anna here symbolically represents the world. Na parichakshita, don't waste it. Don't abuse it. Tadvratam, this is a commitment. Why? Apaha vai annam. Vai, indeed, water is anna, food. Water is food? What? Apaha vai annam, indeed, water is food. Jyotihi annaram. And light is the eater of food. Say what? Sweet, that's this is obscure. Water is food. Light is the eater of food. I'll just be literal, and then we'll come back and make sense out of this. Apsu jyotihi pratishtitam. Light is established in water. Jyotishi apaha pratishtitaha, and waters are established in light. What in the world? Okay, let's try. First, in the seventh anuvaka, we saw prana is anna. In the eighth anuvaka, we see what? Apa, waters. Apa is anna. In the seventh anuvaka, we saw sharira, the body, is the annada, the experiencer or eater of food. And in the eighth anuvaka, what is it? Jyotihi, light. Except, jyoti doesn't mean light here. It can't, and you'll see why in a few minutes. It's going to mean fire, agni. Of course, light, in ancient times, the only real source of light was agni. So that distinction is not surprising. So it says jyoti, light, but the meaning is agni, and you'll see why in just a minute. So I'm actually going to write agni. I'll put jyoti, jyotish. All right. And then it goes on with that very confusing reference that apsu jyotihi pratishtitam. Fire is a... Fire exists in water. Oh, really? And jyotishi apaha pratishtataha. The waters exist in fire. That doesn't really make sense, except we're starting to see something building up here. Can I ask you to wait till the next anuvaka? I said, this is one of the... Usually, things are easier when you take it a little bit at a time. This is one of the rare cases where it's better if you see more of it. You get the whole symbolism. So, bear with me. We'll see the next anuvaka, and then I'll explain some of the symbolism a little bit better. Tat etat annam anne pratishtitam. This... Here, again, the literal translation is almost meaningless. Tat etat annam. This is that food, anna, which is anne pratishtitam, which is established in food. Huh? Again, anna is world, jagat. So the world exists established in the world. That makes a little bit of sense, not much. Saha yaha etat annam anne pratishtitam veda. Saha yaha veda. One who understands this. Understands what? Etat annam anne. This world existing in the world. I'm trying to give a little bit of the symbolism. What about that person? Pratitishtitam pratitishtati. That person becomes well established. And not only that, annavan annadaha bhavati. Just as we saw in the previous anuvaka, that person becomes, that person gains food. Let me translate it world. That person gains the world, anna. That person experiences the world, annadaha. And that person is praiseworthy, mahan bhavati, becomes possessed of prajaya, with praja, progeny, pashu, animals, wealth, man brahma varchas, spiritual glory. Mahan kirtya, becomes great in praise. So let us rush ahead into the ninth anuvaka so we can see, try to get the big picture and pull this together and try to see the symbolism.
Annam bahukurvita, annam bahukurvita, tadvratam, tadvratam, prativiva hannam, prativiva hannam, akasho naraha, akasho naraha, prativyam hakasha pratishtitaha, prativyam hakasha pratishtitaha, akashe prativi pratishtita, akashe prativi pratishtita, tare tadannamanne pratishtitam, tare tadannamanne pratishtitam, sayahe tadannamanne pratishtitam, veda pratitishtati, sayahe tadannamanne pratishtitam, veda pratitishtati, annavanannado bhavati, annavanannado bhavati, mahan bhavati prajaya pashubhir brahmavarchasena, mahan bhavati prajaya pashubhir brahmavarchasena, mahan kirtya, mahan kirtya.
Yeah, that's a typo. This is the ninth. Seven. That's eight. And then nine. Yeah. Sorry. Oh, it went back. That's interesting because the end of the eighth and ninth are identical. The last half of the seventh, eighth, and ninth anuvakas are identical. So I went back one slide and got the right slide, except for the number was wrong. How weird is that? Okay. Usually when you go back, you should get something wrong. Here we got the right thing, except it had the wrong number on. That is just too strange. Okay. So this is the third of these three very odd valis. And first one was annam na nindyat, don't disrespect food. Next was annam na parichakshita, don't waste it, don't abuse it. And now annam bahu kurvita, make food plentiful. Bahu kurvita. It's a potential mood. You should make. You should make food bahu, plentiful. Tadvratam. This is a commitment. Again, this is not talking about crops and food in a literal sense. We're talking about the world. We should nourish the world. We should make the world prosper. Does that sound like jagan mithya? The world is false? Okay, you get the point. So here we go, more symbolism. Prithivi vai annam. Earth is anna. Earth is food. Eat dirt. And akashaha is annadaha, is the eat. Akasha, space, is the eater of food. If you take this stuff literally, it is meaningless. And oddly enough, Shankaracharya is almost silent on these anuvakas. I think it's just understood these are meditations. And you don't analyze meditations, you practice meditations. Just like you don't analyze a beautiful piece of art. You can, but that's missing the point. The idea is to enjoy the beautiful piece of art. Anyway, let's try to understand the symbolism, however. So, first, in the seventh anuvaka, we saw that anna was prana. In the eighth, anna was apa, water. And now in the ninth, anna is prithivi, earth. And previously, we saw anada, the experiencer or eater of the experiencer of the world, literally the eater of food or the experiencer of the world, symbolically. In the seventh anuvaka, it was the sharira, body. In the eighth, it was jyoti, which means agni, fire. And here in the ninth, akasha, space. No. What does that mean? And then it goes on with the same confusing language. Prithivyam akashaha pratishtitaha. Akasha, space, is pratishtitaha, is established. Prithivyam, in the earth. Space is established in the earth. And akashe, in space, prithivi pratishtita, the earth is established. Well, you can find some meaning in that if you look for it. The space is established in the earth. Is space in the earth or not? Of course. And the earth, do you ever see a picture of the earth floating in space? The earth is in space. In fact, the ancient rishis couldn't hardly have imagined that, to see this beautiful globe of the earth floating in space, as we see from so many satellite photographs, how glorious it is to see these photographs. Ancient rishis couldn't see that, but they had some sense of it. Then, and it concludes just as the other two anuvakas concluded, etad annam anne pratishtitam, this is that world which is established in the world. Saha yaha etad annam anne pratishtitam veda pratitishtati. And one who understands this world established in the world, that person becomes well established. That's literally what it means. Annavan, annadaha bhavati. That person becomes blessed with food, blessed with the world. That person experiences the world. Mahan bhavati, the person becomes great, prajaya, with so many progeny, pashubihi, so many cattle and wealth, brahma varchasena, with spiritual light, mahan kirtya, that person becomes great with praise. Okay, now we're ready to try to see the symbolism here. This, to me, looks like it's an extended meditation. That's probably why Shankaracharya doesn't really analyze it. And it looks like a meditation on the world. The general emphasis is pretty clear from the opening passages of each of these three anuvakas. That is, the world is to be treasured as a manifestation of divinity. And that appreciation of the world can take place in meditation. And what these three Anuvakas apparently give is some symbolism which can be used in meditation to see the interrelationship of what? Believe it or not, the underlying symbolism in these three Anuvakas is the Panchabhutas. And that's why I wrote this chart up on the board, so we can see the Panchabhutas. The ancient worldview is that the world is made up of five elements. What are those five elements? Prithivi. And then in order. Then apaha. Then agnihi. Akasha. We're missing one. And so we're missing vayu, right? So, and where is that? Right here. So here are our panchabhutas, or starting from the bottom, prithivi, apaha, agni, vayu, here as prana, and akasha. Here are the five panchabhutas, and you, the experiencer of the five bhutas, you are in the world as the experiencer of these five elements. And this appears to be the basis for this meditation, to meditate on yourself in the world. We saw this mutuality, this depends on that, that depends on this, because you are both part of the world and an experiencer of the world. That seems to be what the symbolism is all about. You are not, you do not experience the world as an outsider. You experience the world as part of the world. In our meditation, we saw that Vyashti is non-separate from Sameshti. You are the microcosm. You are non-separate from the macrocosm. You are in the world and experiencing the world simultaneously. That seems to be what these rather obscure references to. One is in this and that, the other is in that, this mutuality. If you ask, why didn't they just say that? Why didn't they make it more clear? I think it has something to do with the ancient worldview. Our modern worldview is very much formed by science. And you know, even if you don't study science or don't know much about science, you live in a very scientific culture. So we're affected by that, whether you know it or not. And science is very rigorous in showing cause and effect relationships and showing how things work, revealing the underlying dynamics and mechanisms of everything in the world. Kind of takes the mystery out of things. In most ways, that is very good. Years ago, when the body was mysterious, before medical science advanced so much, if somebody was sick, you call the local shaman, the witch doctor. Because the body was so mysterious. How to treat? Hey, we don't know what's going on inside there. Let's do some incantations, let's do some prayers, whatever, because the body is mysterious. So science takes the mystery out of the world, and in most ways that's good. It takes the mystery out of our physical body, so we can treat that. It takes the mystery out of the physical world around us. We enjoy more comfort and a better quality of life. There are two sides to everything. Perhaps there's a downside to taking the mystery out of the world. You remember when you were a child and you looked up at the dark sky and it was overwhelming? And then, as you grow up, you read lots of books about telescopes and astronomy and the Hubble Space Telescope and all of this stuff, which makes it so ordinary and mechanical. And now you can even do this. They have, if you like to do things on a computer, there's Google Earth and Google Sky. You don't even need to go outside and look anymore. You can just sit at your computer. If you want to go, I did this one, it's just for fun. I clicked on Google Earth. You can click on any place. I said, let me go to Rishikesh. I lived there for a while. I said, let's go to Rishikesh. Click, click, click. And you're almost looking down the streets where I used to walk around. It's just amazing. You see the mountains and you see where all the ashrams are. It's almost like being in a plane a couple hundred feet up in the sky, looking down there. You get that kind of perspective. Along with Google Earth, there's Google Sky, which shows all the stars and planets. So you don't have to look through a telescope. You don't even have to look up All you have to do is look at your computer screen and go click, click. Now, you get the point. What happened to the mystery of the world in which we live? To me, mostly it's good, removing the mystery of the world. It's improved our lives immeasurably. But there's a price we pay for that. And the price we pay is we lose some of this childlike sense of awe and mystery about the world. And these three Anuvakas seem to embrace that sense of awe and mystery. These three Anuvakas are incredibly obscure, but isn't that the child's view of the world? The child doesn't understand anything, but grasps for a few words to try to express himself or herself. Perhaps these three Anuvakas could be understood in that sense. The ancient rishis were filled with awe and a sense of mystery for the world in which they lived, in the world, same world in which we live. They expressed their awe and mystery in these Anuvakas and offered it as a form of meditation for us to appreciate. And appreciate what? And this is really the summary of the whole class. Not to appreciate Jagan Mithya. It's not the falsity of the world we're appreciating here. It's the glory of the world. The world as a manifestation of Brahman. What manifestation of Brahman means Satyam Jnanam Anantam. Brahman's existence, Brahman's intelligence, Brahman's limitlessness is in every particle of this universe. So in appreciating one grain of sand, there's a famous poem about that. I don't remember it. William Blake, I guess. Don't remember. Anyway, you can appreciate all of this in a single grain of sand, and that seems to be the mystical message of these three Anuvakas. And concluding these three Anuvakas also brings us to the 10th and final Anuvaka. It's a little longer, so it'll take us perhaps one or two classes to go through. But we're rapidly approaching the end of this text, and it's been a wonderful study. We still have some more to go, so we'll enjoy that in the coming couple of classes. Tomorrow evening, I think most of you know, we're celebrating Ram Navami. I've just had a reflection. You know, in this class, it's very heady is the word that's used for very intellectual. This Ram Navami celebration will be a nice antidote to it. So just some prayer and worship, and maybe we'll do some little singing together. So it'll be very pleasant. So come join us tomorrow evening at 7:30 for our Ram Navami celebration. We'll conclude with our prayers.